This is HPR episode 2441 entitled Server Basics 103. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 30 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is firewalls and fail to ban.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hey everyone, this is Klaatu. You're listening to Hacker Public Radio. This is an entry into my Server Basics mini-series. Last time we talked about SSH and how to secure that and get that sort of out of the firing range. And in so doing, we touched a little bit on firewalls. And I imagine we'll continue to touch on firewalls as we talk about other services, because that's kind of part of that pattern that I mentioned last time. There's a certain rhythm to this sort of thing, and the more you do it, the more you pick up on that rhythm, and thereby you make fewer mistakes. And that's really important. Is like, I know a lot of people say practice is perfect, and in server admining, that almost seems like, well, it's not really so much practice as it is just learning the stuff and then doing it enough so that you don't forget it. And so in that sense, it is practice. But even if you take it out of the specifics and just kind of look at, okay, well, how do I practice this stuff? Like, what do I need to internalize? One of the things that you really need to internalize is the rhythm of steps that you are going to take almost all the time, no matter what you're doing. And one of those steps is install a service, configure a service, restart the service. And with a possible little tacked-on thing there at the end, of enable the service to be permanent, you know, make the service permanent. And then as a security method, the fourth step in that process is to configure the firewall to allow for that service. And I would only want to say firewall. I guess I should say security. Because the security it might entail SE Linux, it might entail the firewall, it might entail fail to ban. You know, it could be a number of different things that add a little bit of protection to whatever you're trying to offer to the wide world. And today I want to talk about fail to ban, which is kind of one of those other things that you probably want to leverage in your server configuration. Fail to ban is just this beautiful log parser that looks through your secure log, but it can monitor a lot of other things too. But it monitors that, and it tries to pick up on IP addresses that are repeatedly being denied access. And the assumption there is that if someone at some IP address is repeatedly trying to get into the server and is repeatedly trying to fail, they're probably trying to break in. And that's not a bad assumption. It's actually a pretty good one. Now you can increase the number of chances that they have or decrease the number of chances they have such that, you know, one failure results in being banned, or 10 failures, 3 failures, whatever. And maybe that will depend on the kind of service that you were talking about. Maybe you want to give your developers, for instance, 2 or 3 tries for a successful SSH login. Although I don't really know why. Like, why would they be logging in? Maybe if they forgot to use their special server key that you gave them, you know, and they just did a standard SSH without the dash I. Although at that point, tell them to add into their SSH config a rule telling, you know, when you SSH into this, use this identity file. Anyway, I'm getting off track here. What I'm trying to say is, fail to ban will ban IP addresses that continually fail to authenticate. So it's not a hard thing to set up, but you do need to be on your server. So I'm assuming you've still got your virtual server that we set up earlier, and I'm assuming also that you remember that we set up the ability to SSH into it. Now remember, your SSH command needs to be directed to a specific port. You can't just say SSH CLATU at IP address. You have to tell it which port to look at. So that's dash P 22123 in this case, if you've followed along with me. Of course, you might have used your own port number, so you would want to know that. And if you've forgotten any of this stuff, or if you've accidentally, misconfigured something, it's a virtual server. You can just fire it. You can look at the screen, and reverse whatever you need to reverse. Or install a new one for that matter. It's not a big deal. And in real life, the equivalent to that would be going into the server room and plugging in the monitor and plugging in the keyboard and sitting there like an idiot, doing stuff manually. And everyone will look at you and think, oh, they screwed something up. Because generally, you don't have to do that. Generally, you should be able to remote into the server because that's just how things are done, and there's usually too many servers to make that a common thing. I mean, it does happen. I mean, sometimes you have to go and do some kind of manual maintenance on something, but generally speaking, especially in the larger the server farm, the less frequent it is to see people dragging in a monitor and a keyboard to go do some work. So, yep, you SSH into your virtual machine. There you go. So what we want to do is install fail to ban, as I said. So we'll become root, or we'll use sudo, and we'll do a yum install fail, and then the number 2 ban. And there are no matches found on my particular install of CentOS. Well, that's silly, but it's not the worst thing in the world. So failed to ban is not a part of the official repository for Red Hat or CentOS, and that's not actually that surprising. And this is something that's going to come up a lot, which is why I'm mentioning it on air here. I didn't do this off air, for instance. So whether you're using Red Hat or CentOS or SUSE or Ubuntu or anything, that doesn't really matter. The thing is that you as a desktop user are going to, you as a desktop user are used to having certain, well, anything really at your beck and call. And on the server distributions, you that's not necessarily all the time the case. For a couple of reasons. One is because maybe there's a sponsoring company behind it all that doesn't feel like it can take on every single software ever written and placed into a repository as something that they can officially support. Meaning that if they answer the phone and you start yelling at them because fail to ban isn't banning correctly, they maybe don't want to deal with that because of reasons. They have other stuff to deal with. They have lots of other software that they're supporting. So that's one reason. And then the other one, I think, this is me surmising, that on a server, one of the ideas is that the less you can install, the fewer attack vectors there are. So it may have something to do with just kind of like, well, if we offer this set of 200 packages, and I'm just making up numbers here, then that's only 200 things that we have to worry about, or that the user can screw themselves over with. And if they want more, then they can go seek out more on their own, which I'm going to do right now. Yum install EPEL release. Now that's for CentOS and for Red Hat, and not yeah, just for CentOS and Red Hat, not for Fedora. And that's a good one to install. For other distributions, there may be other, as I say, unofficial official repositories to install. And obviously, you kind of want to do it with a grain of salt because maybe it's not in the official repo for a reason. But fail to ban, I feel quite secure with. And so I've just added EPEL-release, which is in the Red Hat repository or the yeah, I think the Red Hat and CentOS repository. So it's kind of funny that their unofficial release package set has an installer for itself in their official package set. So do a yum search fail to ban, and I get On this one, I get about 11 different options. I can install fail to ban all. I can install fail to ban firewall D for firewall D support. That sounds good. I know that we're using that. Fail to ban server, and then just fail to ban itself. So I'm gonna take a wild guess and say that I need to install fail to ban and fail to ban dash firewall D. Now, for all I know, one includes the other. I'm not sure. But I'm going to install them both anyway, and no, it looks like both might be separate entities. It looks like firewall D itself pulls in something called fail to ban pulls in something called fail to ban syn-mail, fail to ban server, and that's good. Okay, so now that we've got that installed, we can take a look at all of its configuration. Now, if you didn't know anything about fail to ban, and for all I know you don't, the first step that you would probably want to take is looking at its man page. And if you did that, you would see that its man page is very short and basically useless. It tells you that it's a fail to ban, it's a package, it's a server and a client program, that it limits brute force authentication attempts. It doesn't tell you anything about how to set it up or how to configure this at all. So that's not useful. And it doesn't even, I don't even think it references, see also fail to ban server, fail to ban client, oh, and jail.conf, that's what it is. So it does reference that, and that's a good thing. So now if we do a man jail.conf, we see a little bit more on how this thing is supposed to be configured, and that's kind of nice. So it says conf files are distributed by fail to ban. It is recommended that conf files should remain unchanged to ease upgrades. If needed, customization should be provided in a .local file. For example, if you would like to enable the ssh-iptables-ipsetjail specified in jail.conf, create jail.local containing, and then it gives you the little code that... So it sounds like what we need to do is look at this thing, that this whole jail.conf system. And it kind of tells you kind of like what files are involved. I mean, it says, okay, there's a jail.conf, there's a fail-to-ban.conf, fail-to-ban.d/*.conf. Doesn't tell you where those things are located in the larger, greater file system. Now, if you know anything about Unix, then you probably know that the most likely case, or the most likely location for this would be /etc. So if we do a /etc/fail, yep, there it goes. So there it is. It's fail to ban in the /etc directory, and sure enough, in there's this thing called jail.conf, and there's paths-fedora.conf, jail.d, so there's a bunch of stuff in there. Not too sure what it all has to do with each other, not sure really what I'm supposed to be looking at there. But let's back up for a minute. Let's say that you didn't know enough about Unix, or you haven't done this enough to sort of think all of a sudden, oh, well, the configuration files are probably in /etc, I should just look there. Maybe you didn't know that. Maybe you thought, well, maybe they're in /usr/share or something. I don't know. So the thing, I mean, you could obviously just go out to the internet and look and find out all this stuff, but I'm just trying to impress upon you kind of how... Again, the rhythm of this stuff. So you've just installed fail to ban. You have no idea what to do next. And maybe you think, well, I should just start the service. And admittedly, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. You could try to start it. But then what if it does start? You know, maybe if you start it, it'll fail and tell you what to do next. But then again, maybe it will start, but with completely just bogus settings that will not do anything for you. So, and maybe you think, well, Plateau said install, configure, start. Okay, so where's the configure step? We don't know. So if you would know, if you know your system well enough, then you can figure some stuff out. So I'm sure that there's an equivalent yum command. I don't know what it is, so I just use rpm, and that is rpm-ql, so query and list, fail to ban. Now, unfortunately, fail to ban isn't a real package. Remember I said that when I installed fail to ban, it pulled in a bunch of other stuff. It pulled in fail to ban-server, fail to ban-syn-mail, and then I myself installed fail to ban-firewall D. So knowing that, the fact that it contains no files doesn't surprise me, but I'm going to guess because this is how things work. Fail to ban dash server is the one, is the package that, that drives fail to ban. So I'll do an rpm dash ql dash dash query dash dash list in the long form for fail to ban dash server. And sure enough, in fact, I'm going to even pipe that to less because that just spit out many, many screenfuls. And that tells you, it lists every file in that package. And so sure enough, the configuration files are in slash etsy, and then the actual files that kind of make up the program are all in slash usr slash lib slash python blah blah blah. So that's how you would kind of reverse engineer what you just installed. Now obviously the rpm command here wouldn't apply necessarily to, well, it certainly wouldn't apply to Ubuntu. I've never tried it on OpenSUSE, I don't think. It should work, but there's probably a nice, zipper is a great packaging tool, so it's, there's probably a super easy, obvious zipper command to get a list of all the installed packages. So anyway, we've found the place to go, so we're going to go there. Slash etsy slash fail to ban. We do a list. Well, we saw in the man page that jail.conf was kind of the place to be, but that we shouldn't edit it. So let's do a cat jail.conf over to jail.local, because that's what it told us to do, and then we'll open up jail.local. And this is a pretty nice file. It's a pretty well commented file. The tricky thing is, and this literally the first time I did this really confused me, you know, you've just made this a copy of the file, and then you open up the copy, and one of the first things you see is you should not modify this file. And that's kind of scary. And when I first saw it, the first time I ever installed fail to ban, maybe it wasn't the first time, but you know, at some point when I installed fail to ban, because I think they switched to this file later on in its life. But anyway, it really confused me because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not supposed to edit this file, but it told me to make a .local file. Well, yes, that's part of the old message. So I just get rid of that part. And then it says, provide customizations in a jail.local file, that's this one, or in jail.dcustomization.local. For example, to change the default ban time for all jails and to enable the ssh-iptables jail, the following uncommented would appear in the local file. See man5jail.conf for details. So the example that they give is the default rule, this is an INI style rule, default ban time equals 3600 seconds presumably, and then SSHD enabled true. Okay, so that gives us a little bit of a taste of what we're in for, and then if you kind of scroll through the file and kind of read the comments, you get the idea that most of this is actually set to something that is sensible, actually. So if we had started this, we might have had some success, maybe. So there's a space for ignoring IPs, which would be really, really handy for myself, because I know that I'm going to be SSHing into this thing a lot, and I would hate to ever be banned from this server. So I'm going to just go ahead and add my IP address of this local computer to this file so that I'm basically whitelisting myself. So that's done. And it tells me to use a space and or comma separator. Okay, that's always important to know what delimiters to use. And then I keep scrolling down and I'm reading stuff. And then I read about a backend and the available options being these various things. Oh, there's systemd. I know that CentOS uses systemd, so let's switch it from backend auto to systemd. That seems like a sensible thing to do for this. And you just, you know, kind of keep reading pretty much, and if you see something that's really, really obvious, then change it. And if there's something that you don't understand, yeah, maybe don't mess around with that one. There's a bunch of stuff like the different actions to take in order to ban things, and yeah, so stuff that you don't understand, like I say, kind of keep away from that. But then you finally get down to the jails section, and that's where the real meat of this configuration is. And it defines it names each jail after the service that it is monitoring. So there's an SSHD one right up here at the top. And it has a couple of different options on the kinds of filters that you can use and what log path you should be monitoring and what port to use and so on. What's missing, though, is the important tag of enabled. And if you remember, at the top of the file in the example comment, it specifically said to set it to enabled equals true, and that is not set here. So currently, failed demand. If we'd started it, it probably would have started. I don't really remember. I think it would have. I should have tried it, I guess. But anyway, but it would have been monitoring nothing, because nothing, no jail is enabled. That would have been possibly deceptive if we'd done that without configuring first, because we might have just said, hey, cool, no configuration required. We can start the thing and it's working. Well, no, it would have been starting, and it would have been started and not, it wouldn't have done anything. So that's the SSH one. And then there's one called specifically for SSH DDoS. This jail corresponds to the standard configuration. The mail who is action sends a notification email. I think I'll skip that one for now because I don't know what that is. SE Linux dash SSH. That's not really any, I don't see how that's any different from SSH. The back end, yeah, it doesn't really look that different. But I think I'm going to go ahead and enable the one labeled SE Linux SSH. There. And then we've got other, it's got basically pages and pages, or screenfuls and screenfuls, rather, of services that it can monitor for you, and it's got a bunch of presets in there. So as you add services to your server, you'll want to come back into this jail.conf and enable the services that apply. And if you don't do that, then you know you're not taking full advantage of your log files. And you're kind of leaving yourself open, possibly, to some interesting brute force attacks. So I'm going to save that. And then, so now we're assuming it's configured. I mean, and you could look at other things, like the fail2ban.conf. Probably not a bad thing to look at. But it pretty much states here that everything is pre-configured. I mean, there's some customization that you can do, but if you have no reason to, then I would not do that. So we'll do a systemctl start fail to ban, and it doesn't give me anything back, so I guess that means yes. Hopefully you remembered how to check for fail to ban, and yeah, I do a systemctl status fail to ban, and it is active and is running 6 seconds ago, and it gives me the list of things that that happened in the log file, so it confirms that everything started. What it doesn't confirm really is that anything is necessarily active. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna do fail to ban dash client. And this command, the fail to ban client, and you could look at the man page, obviously, to find out more about it. But it's got a little bit of a configuration tool, I guess. So you can look at what your configuration is, your current configuration is, with fail to ban dash client dash d space dash d. And the space dash D dumps the entire configuration to your screen. It's just probably a screen full of different rules that will be applied as needed. That's kind of the quick and dirty way. The easier, or the not the easier, but the more concise way and the more focused way is to do a fail to ban dash client status, SE, in this case, SE Linux dash SSH. And it tells you status for the jail is SE Linux dash SSH. Filter currently failed is 0. Total failed is 0. Actions currently banned 0. Total banned 0. So if I guess I shouldn't have added my IP address. So I'll undo that really quick and then restart the service. And then I'll try to brute force this thing, possibly. Although I might not even be able to do that. But we'll see. So I'm logging out of that. Now I'm going to try to log in. Oops. I'm going to log in with a fake key. So I'll say SSH port 22123 identity file foo. And so that's one. Oh, it actually worked. Yeah, well, right now, because we've got the key thing going, it's not going to let me fake login, and that's fine for now. If I had more time and if you wanted to hear me do it, I would go back and turn passwordless login on, and I would keep brute forcing it until I got banned, and then you could watch on your virtual machine as the IP address that you were trying to log in to got added to the block rules. And now there's a timeout after, I think, what did we see in the thing? It said 3,600 seconds or something. Eventually it will unblock the IP address, because I guess there's the presumption that since IP addresses tend to change, they're dynamically assigned, so maybe a person from, you know, 91.23.24.25 will now be a totally legit user, and so after 3,600 seconds, or maybe it's 82,000 seconds, I don't really remember, will be unbanned, and then they can come back onto our server because maybe they belong there. And obviously you have the ability to unblock people as well through fail to ban client or through the configuration file, or I think I don't remember, through firewall D I think is where you'd have to change that, but you can also do it, I'm pretty sure, from fail to ban client. Point being, fail to ban is a really great little tool that detects brute force attempts. Are there ways around it? Yeah, of course. You could if you've got a sizable pool of IP addresses, you can brute force from different IP addresses and possibly prolong the ban time. Or you know, delay when you are banned, but eventually fail to ban is going to pick it up, and it is going to ban IP addresses that fail more than some set number of times. And you can set that number yourself in the jail.conf as well, and then restart that service. When I first start servers, when I'm first setting them up, I reduce the failure count to one. For the first like day or two of that server's life, just to get a good healthy list of stuff to stop brute forcing my server, and just dropping those packets, because it gets very tiresome when you're looking through logs. You have to like parse through all these hopefully failed login attempts. So yeah, fail to ban is one of the aside from obviously the SSH. Configuration and the firewall configuration, fail to ban is the next thing that I set up on a server. And it's a little bit scary to do it, because you think, well, if I've got all these protections up while I'm trying to configure this thing, how do I know I'm not blocking myself while I'm trying to configure, you know, some service that's for some reason not working? And there's that possibility, you know. Maybe you're setting up a web server, and for some reason, no one can. You can't seem to get to the website that you've just set up. Why not? And then you start questioning yourself. Well, gee, am I blocking myself through some kind of firewall rule or something? But if you're familiar with this stuff, and you know where to look, and you know how to configure it, then it's not an issue. It's something that it's a known factor. You know that you have the firewall up. You know how to check your firewall rules. You know that you have your fail to ban set up. You know how to set your fail to ban rules. So you can look at that stuff and rule that out. SE Linux, we haven't talked a whole lot about it, but you know that that exists, possibly, depending on what server software, what OS you're running, what distribution you're running. There are chances that you're blocking yourself or you're blocking a service unintentionally. But if you know the tools that sit between you and the rest of the world, then you can check that stuff and make sure that no, that's not happening. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. I would go ahead and set up the security services, get comfortable with them, and put them to good use. Okay, I think that's probably long enough for this episode. I guess your obvious homework would be to install and set up fail to ban and give it a go. You know, if you're doing this in a virtual machine especially, set up fail to ban and then create turn on passwordless logging in SSH or use some other service if you want, and then try to brute force your little virtual machine and watch from your virtual machine as your IP addresses are banned. And again, you can do that with the fail to ban dash client space status space and then the name of the rule. So whatever it is, selinux-ssh or just SSH, whatever you ended up using, ssh.ddos, I don't know, try a couple of them, see what happens. It'll be pretty darn satisfying. Okay, until next time, good luck.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.